Hello and welcome to the Cognito podcast from More Barlow. More Barlow is a law firm focused on helping entrepreneurs and business leaders and organisations and private individuals and families through the opportunities, challenges and the sometimes life-altering circumstances that might come your way. Incognito, the podcast, we'll be holding conversations with a range of experts, all with a focus on what success means. And once you achieve it, what are the smartest moves you can make to stay ahead of the game? And we're going to be digging into subjects like growing a business sustainably, exit strategies, and today, energy boosting nutrition. I'm your host, Zoe Hansen, and in this episode, we're talking about nutrition and how it can affect performance in the boardroom just as it can in elite sport. On this episode of the Cognito podcast, we are joined by the brilliant Emily Russell, critical care and performance dietitian. So wonderful to have you along, Emily. Can you tell us who it is you work with and what you do for them?
Yeah, so as the title of my profession, I suggest it's kind of in two parts. So the critical care element is clinical nutrition. So that's generally with the NHS. I'm actually a locum dietitian. So that means that I will contract out to different hospitals. Yeah, mainly like the hospitals most in need. And then the other side of my job, the performance dietetics, that's more around sports nutrition. And I'll work with athletes for that.
So can you tell us which athletes you work with, or are you sort of bound by contract not to say anything?
So the last couple of years, actually, obviously with everything that's been going on, with being qualified in intensive care, I would say that a lot of my focus has actually been on the NHS. So I've been doing more just private work with individual athletes, which, yeah, so I can't really give names, specific names in that case. But a lot of endurance athletes, that's a personal interest that I have, like, for myself. I always think it's a little bit easier to work with athletes if you can personally relate to them.
Yes.
But then pre-pandemic, I was working for the Japanese national cycling team. So that was the track cycling. And I was working with the endurance side of the track cycling team.
Oh, amazing stuff. So yeah. So when you have, you know, a team like that, when they come to you, how do you sort of start? Where do you start? Do you get them to sort of keep a food diary for a week, or what do you do?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the athlete's base knowledge. So it's always just good having just general chit chat, finding out like their baseline knowledge. Food diaries are great just getting a feel for the types of foods that they eat, especially around a training plan.
As long as they're honest.
Exactly.
That's I've kept a food say. Diary like, before. It was a food lie.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's where I mean, like, in terms of conversation, it's much easier to get a feel for somebody's real diet when you're just talking to them and maybe can catch them off guard. Yeah. Things as well. Because, you know, as with anything, you can always rehearse what you're going to say. And athletes are normal people too. And I think food is really personal, so they don't always want to change it, even if they know that deep down that they probably should or they could benefit from some changes.
Are there sort of certain foods or certain habits that you would like them to get into?
Yeah, I mean, it always depends on the phase of training that they're in, because that can make a difference in terms of the diet. Quite dramatically, and also depending on the sport. But I think with everybody, athletes and non-athletes, that just the fundamental basis of a good diet is something that we all kind of overlook. And especially like more recently, people want a quick fix. We live like really busy, mm-hmm. hectic lifestyles, and people want, one pill that fits all and, you know, mm-hmm. something that's really easy to take. And sadly, you know, with all these labels of like superfoods, that kind of gives the impression that you can have a bad diet, but you can take consume a superfood and suddenly your diet's better. And I think that that's a misconception in sports nutrition too, in terms of all, you know, the hype around supplements too, and all the performance benefits of supplements. But that always comes with a risk as well. So I think that just going back to the absolute basics, and sometimes people don't like that because it just sounds a bit boring, but yeah, the basics aren't always done right, and there's no point making, you know, minor changes to a diet if overall the basics aren't done right.
So what would you call the basics? Give us some specifics.
Yeah, I think so just like variety of foods, not sticking to the same things day
so
in, day
dairy
out.
Milk and Galaxy.
Yeah. So like a rainbow of colours is always something I think dietitians end up talking about.
Okay.
But like, yeah, in terms of, and I don't mean packaging. But yeah, foods in there, you know, in their raw state, if you've got a variety of colours, that always means that there's different nutrients that are involved there too. So looking at like your fruits and vegetables, whole grains will contain a great variety of nutrients, and it's had, you know, less taken away from it. Anything that's like a white carbohydrate has normally had like a lot of the goodness removed from it and fiber removed from it. And to variety in terms of like protein sources, so you know, I wouldn't push somebody to be vegan, but also on the flip side, I wouldn't push somebody to eat like loads of meat, somewhere in the middle with that. Mm-hmm. You know, and if somebody chooses to be vegan, you can have a perfectly healthy diet on a vegan diet, but it just means that you just probably need a bit more variety in terms of where you're getting those protein sources from, because plant-based proteins, they're not what we call whole proteins. Okay. So you need to consume like lots of different types of protein to make it a whole protein.
Okay.
Again, like dairy is a big thing that's like people have got mixed opinions about, haven't they? You know, some people don't like consuming dairy and other people do. But I mean, it's from a nutritional point of view, and there's so many health benefits with dairy. And I think just being educated on, right, if you're making that decision to remove something from your diet, it should be an informed decision of then how are you going to replace it for it to be a healthy diet.
Talking about elite sport, and when we talk about, you know, the cycling team, there's a lot of similarities between elite sports people and like a CEO, you know, a board member, the owner of a business. Do those similarities carry on through nutrition, and how the right nutrition can have an effect on cognitive performance?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that obviously we think of athletes and, you know, what foods they can eat to enhance performance or get the best out of their physical abilities. But as everyday humans doing our, you know, our jobs, and, you know, you mentioned CEOs, but personally, I think everybody getting out of bed in the morning should think of it the same. There's a really nice, I always like link back to Japan because I spent quite a few years there, but there's a really nice phrase in Japan called ikigai, which is basically your purpose, your like daily reason to get out of bed. And people that put their like 100% effort into doing everything that they do. So, you know, it doesn't matter what job you do, but you'll look to do it the very best that you can. And I think that that should be applied to nutrition too. So, you know, we might try and do, you know, our job the best that we can, but if we're not feeding the brain, mm-hmm. then how do you do that? You know, there is more and more research coming through to suggest that cognitive function can be improved or enhanced through having a healthy diet. But I mean, I think, you know, as we sort of mentioned before, that people look for a quick fix, and unfortunately that isn't a quick fix. It is those long-term actions that we take, and that's where perhaps like the word diet people think of as a short-term thing. Mm-hmm. And it should just be our daily like lifestyle that, you know, we're looking at how to have a healthy lifestyle, and that should include physical activity as well as, you know, as well as food.
Well, what would you say, so somebody, you know, a CEO of a company, what would you say their basics should be? Because very recently I've interviewed quite a lot of business people who have, you know, these massive companies that they run, and they're under pressure, and, you know, everything sort of falls on their shoulders. And what I was amazed at was in every single interview, every one of them said, I didn't eat breakfast this morning.
Yeah.
I wasn't really just interviewing common. Them about that first.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, an athlete wouldn't start a race, you know, in a fasted state.
like boxers and things, yeah, they might right. be in a slightly faster state, but in most cases, you know, you'd always be looking to fuel your activity and fuel a race or whatever that you're about to take part in. And I think that should be the same for CEOs or anybody going to work too. You know, our hormones work with our circadian rhythm, so that sort of body clock, and different release of different hormones will occur at different times, but ultimately the best way to trigger those hormones, which, you know, affects our sleep, affects our ability to concentrate, our alertness, is through having consistent meals and regular meals as well. So not doing one thing one day and another thing another day, but just trying to be as consistent as possible. Yeah, sort of eating every sort of 3 to 5 waking hours, obviously not getting up in the middle of the night to have a snack, that's not practical. But yeah, during those waking hours, trying to have regular meals is like, yeah, is crucial. And I don't personally believe that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, which you often hear. I think it's one of several very important meals of the day. You know, if you're somebody who's that gets up in the morning, just doesn't feel hungry, mm-hmm. even just having like a smoothie or, you know, a banana and a handful of nuts or just something small, just to, you know, have some form of nutrition in the morning is better than nothing, for sure.
And you mentioned about fasting. We hear a lot about fasting at the moment.
Yeah.
Does it work or just work for some people in some situations?
No, I think like there's, you know, we still need to do a lot of research around fasting, but ultimately concentration levels are going to be better when you feel satisfied. You know, okay. if you're distracted by the fact that you're hungry, obviously you're not going to concentrate as well. And I think that for some people, they find, you know, they've lost weight or they feel great when they've fasted. But the likelihood of that is because prior to that diet that includes a period of time fasting, their diet wasn't the best that it could be. So again, just going back to the basics and looking like, well, why would you restrict yourself during a period of time when actually you could enjoy food? It's just that you need to be educated on the types of food to enjoy. Consistency in terms of like meal timings as well, eating regularly.
When you say regularly, is that sort of, okay, breakfast, lunch and dinner, or is this sort of how often, or only eating breakfast if it's before 7, or how would you sort of set that out?
Yeah, I think our bodies really do like consistency. And like if you can eat at a similar time each day, then generally that is better just for a hormone release. But, you know, that's not practical, all the time. So as long as you're trying to fit in regular meal times, it doesn't have to be, you know, on the dot at 7 p.m. every day. And also, you know, if you're living a busy lifestyle and sometimes it's not possible to have a set meal as such, then just making sure that you're not going long periods of times without eating, having a snack between hand. There are lots of packaged foods these days that aren't as bad as they'd like. Perhaps maybe like you might have thought of, like there is available foods like a wrap within a supermarket,
right.
And that would obviously be better than to go long periods of time without eating, or perhaps rather than just picking up a coffee with a chocolate bar, something that is going to have various nutrients in there. So yeah, whole grain wrap with some salad and some ham in there, or some lean chicken, you know, that's like a small meal that you can eat on the go, eat quickly, but it's also, you know, fairly healthy too.
And there are lots and lots of options that we can have, isn't there? It's just that sometimes I don't know if it's my, and I'm only talking from my point of view, but I think sometimes it's my brain being lazy that says, yes, I'm going to Costa for cake and coffee, rather than yeah. going somewhere and trying to choose a healthy option. It's easier to talk myself into that because I'm in Costa already.
Yeah.
Than it is yeah. to think, well, I could go next door.
Yeah, definitely. And I think unpicking those like habits that you've got and trying to form new habits.
Yeah.
And also just, yeah, avoiding the easy option. I mean, I suppose with somebody who is a CEO of a company, they haven't got to that position because of the easy option.
Right.
And that should be applied to diet too. It might not always seem easy at the start, but once you've got into a new routine and you've made it like a day-to-day lifestyle change, then it's a little bit easier to manage. And preparation is always makes things easier too. Like if you can do like a weekly shop and kind of have a rough idea of like what meals that you're going to have, or think about what you might want to take for lunch and prepare that, you know, the evening before or something, then you're in control. Whereas if you're in Costa and you're starving because you've not eaten for 6 hours and there's a cake at the side of you, and yeah, obviously it's going to be more tempting to pick that up and to eat that than, you know, if you're satisfied and you've already eaten something because you've been prepared.
And while we're talking about it, coffee is a CEO's mate, right? Yeah. It's all of our friends. It's certainly a morning buddy, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Where do we sit with coffee? Is it good or is it bad, or what is it?
So coffee's gone through sort of a wave of popularity. You wind back quite a few years and we felt like coffee was the enemy and we shouldn't be drinking it and should try and reduce your caffeine intake and so on. Nowadays it's really popular and everyone's drinking it left, right and centre, like you said. And I'd say it probably sits somewhere in the middle, in terms of moderation is kind of key with everything. Good sources of coffee do have potential health benefits. They can contain polyphenols, which acts as like an antioxidant, but also it helps to improve alertness. So going back to the relateness, like how you can relate diet sort of in the office or with an athlete, athletes often consume caffeine before an event or in an endurance event during an event to stay alert and to try and get the best out of sort of brain power, as it might be. And the same within sort of a corporate setting, that, you know, coffee can help improve alertness. However, our tolerance is individual. So sort of general guidance is not to have more than 300 milligrams a day. And an average coffee is maybe between 90 and 120 milligrams. So you might be looking at sort of like a max of like three a day. However, like I said, everybody's tolerance is a little bit different and that might be way too much for some people. It can make some people feel quite jittery and anxious. And it can improve cortisol, which is a stress hormone. So I think that sort of as I said, really, it's really individual and how you respond to it. If you have a cup of coffee and then feel that like you're feeling jittery, you feel a little bit more stressed, then it might just be that you're a very sensitive sort of responder to caffeine. And then in that case, maybe just switch to having sort of a decaf version, or maybe just starting the day with one caffeinated coffee and then have a decaf, or have like a herbal tea, which has also got some health benefits as well.
Are there any top foods for boosting brain power or anything else as well? You know, anything else like any sort of exercise that you think, yeah, that boosts your brain power, that boosts your cognitive power?
Yeah, I feel like I'm probably going to give answers that people don't want to hear. but no, I think that it's, you know, really about having such a mixture of foods. Now, one of the things that is proven to have an effect on longevity and alertness, concentration, and also reducing the incidence of depression or stress is a healthy gut. So there's something called the gut-brain axis, where essentially our brain communicates with our gut. The healthier the gut is, there is evidence to suggest that there are less rates of stress or anxiety. So research that has been done on, you know, on people that have suffered from anxiety or stress or depression generally have quite bad gut health. Mm-hmm. And then vice versa. So you might have heard before that people with IBS, so irritable bowel syndrome, might be stressed, or vice versa. They might be stressed, which results in irritable bowel syndrome. And so there's that kind of link there between the brain and the gut. So foods that will improve your gut microbiome could arguably improve your brain function.
Okay. Are these the probiotic yogurts then?
Yeah, I was going to say a bit of a buzzword at the moment, the word probiotics. But yeah, you've not necessarily got to have supplements. There's lots of foods that contain natural, sort of, that work as a natural probiotic. But just going back, so our gut is full of like healthy bacteria, contains some bad bacteria too. But that healthy bacteria will help to optimize our immunity, so also prevent you from getting sick. But it also works with our like neurons and nerves within the gut as well, which helps with those messages then to the brain. So when your bad bacteria becomes more concentrated than the good bacteria. That's called dysbiosis. And that's when, you can get symptoms of diarrhea or irritable bowel syndrome. And that's when the incidence of anxiety and depression and stress can be higher. Just trying to bring that balance back in, basically. So increasing your good bacteria. The ways that you can do that is through prebiotics. So they're foods that feed our natural gut bacteria.
What are the worst foods and drinks to consume? Is it booze and chocolate?
I don't really like to think of any food as being necessarily bad for us. I think labelling food as bad, there's no benefit of that in terms of that, you don't always need to avoid treats or, mm-hmm. It means you never need to cut out something entirely from your diet unless you've got a health condition that it requires that you do. But speaking generally, no food should be labelled as a bad food. But obviously, foods that are energy dense but not nutrient dense. Yeah. So by that, I mean they contain a lot of energy for their portion size, but they're not giving you much in the way of other nutrients. Then the only real benefit from that is maybe taste and enjoyment. But that ultimately is also a big part of why we eat, right? Like it's a social element. Everybody gets enjoyment from food for sure. So that's why I think I don't like to label foods as bad. I think that, if you want to go out for a meal and celebrate your birthday, then, choose what you want to choose. But again, there's no time like the present in then just getting back onto eating healthily again. So you can enjoy foods that you want to enjoy, but get back onto, your healthy diet as soon as you can afterwards.
So I'm now off to get myself a coffee so I'm a bit more alert. And to eat my rainbow of fruits and vegetables and all of my different foods. Thank you so much for coming on, Emily. It's been really fascinating talking to you.
Oh, no, thanks very much for having me. I've enjoyed it. I was a bit nervous, but I've enjoyed it.
So certainly food for thought there. Did you see what I did? Now, for more interesting insight from Cognito, head over to cognito.morebarlow.com, where we've crafted and curated a range of articles, podcasts and videos on subjects that we think you'll enjoy, find interesting and hopefully inspiring too. And thank you so much for listening.